Hello, my friends. Good evening or good night. How is everybody doing? I'm so excited you're here with me tonight. I have a really interesting question that I want you to help me answer, and that is, why does everybody want to quit their jobs? A new survey says 2/3 of Americans want to quit. What in the world happened? Because, you know, there's always a certain number of people who want to quit their jobs. But this is way higher. I mean, it's normally like 1/3. And now it's 2/3. And they're actually doing it. And we're also seeing people who were otherwise employed who could go back to work, and they're not doing it yet. So I want to know from you, what do you think? Why is it that so many Americans do not want their current job anymore? And then I have some research that I'm going to share with you, but I want to hear from you first. So share with me your answers. And I'm hoping that my commenting system is working tonight. So please comment quickly and tell me that you are here. Tell me where you are listening in from so that I can make sure comments are working properly. So if you'll do that, and in the meantime, I'll give you a quick reminder to head over to jmcfarland.com and sign up to be a member to help support this podcast. You can sign up for free, and that does give you some benefits, but the real benefits come when you become a subscriber. You get access to commercial-free broadcasts. You get access to my blog. You get access to, what else? Oh, my books, webinars, T-shirts, all kinds of things, depending on what level you come in at. So please take a minute and do that. The other question that I want to deal with tonight is whether or not the federal government can and should make employers that have more than 100 employees get vaccinated. So this is something that Biden is proposing. And I want to know what you think about that as well. Jenny joins us from Logan. Hey, Jenny, thank you for texting in. That means our system is working. So everybody else, tell me where you are dialing in from, what city and state, and I know what platform you're on. I can see that. So, and let me know what you think. The real reason everyone is quitting their jobs. What do you think? And it sounds to me like Carl the Cricket might be back outside the window. I don't know if you can hear him. Let's see. Tell me if you can hear Carl or not. Heather is giving me clappy hands, so I'm assuming she can hear everything okay. And does that mean you can hear Carl as well? remember, you can get your Carl the Cricket t-shirts by going to jmcfarland.com. Real reason why everyone is quitting their jobs right now. You know, we've speculated a lot on this show about why people are not returning to work. We have a hiring crisis going on. The employers that I know are struggling to find work. We're struggling to find employees. And we're seeing this across the country. And at first we thought, and I'm sure that it is part of the equation, but it can't be enough of the equation. I shared a study with you here a month or so ago that showed that about 1.2 million people were not returning to work because of the added unemployment benefit. And so, but that didn't explain the like 10 million jobs that are available. We're trying to figure out why is it that they're not going to work? And if they are going to work, why is it that they want to quit their job? Any ideas or suggestions? Nobody can hear Carl. Maybe I've finally got my system to where Carl can't butt in, cause I have a digital, compressor working on Carl's signal to try and weed him out. So Sarah says she can't hear him either. So feel bad for Carl. While you're answering the questions, also, you all know that we have a dog in the family because my my daughter rescued a dog and then 3 days later decided she didn't want a dog. And this dog was so dang cute and easy to care for that we couldn't send it back. So we are now dog owners again. But that doesn't come without its problems. For example, brand new bed for the dog. And that's what we woke up to this morning. And you'll notice that the remote control is there. She grabbed the remote and she brought it down to the floor. But for some reason, and thankfully for her, for some reason, she didn't chew up the remote. So that's why we still have a dog. If that remote had gone, then maybe that would be justification enough. But, you know, she's new. She's still getting to know us. So I don't know. I'm not sure what we're going to do. I looked at kenneling, and when the dog's a little bit older, that's a very long and difficult process. So we're still trying to figure out. None of you have given me any suggestions why it is that everyone is quitting their job. Hi, Lizzie and Kearns. Thanks for joining us. Any other suggestions why it is possibly? I'm trying to give you time to type in and respond before our answer. Okay, Heather. She says, my guess would be they're not satisfied with the pay and the amount of work required. So that's really interesting, Heather, because that popped into my mind. But they were interested and the pay was enough 18 months ago. We're talking about a monumental shift. You know, it's one thing over the course of 5 years, you'll see that happens as inflation occurs and they're not being paid enough. But to see this monumental shift in 16 to 18 months is unheard of. Lizzie says they're burned out. Again, were they burned out 18 months ago? So you got to kind of think in terms what has been going on in the last 18 months and how has that changed them? I think the obvious answer is, well, the pandemic has been going on. So how has that changed people's perspectives on their jobs? Let's hear from Sarah. Sarah says, I know my job is especially hard now because we are understaffed. It makes me want to find another less stressful job. I went from pre-COVID easy job to lots of required OT and the pay hasn't changed. So that's interesting, Sarah, and that's something I hadn't thought of. That because there is a worker shortage, the average employee is possibly having to do more work, the work of the empty position next to them. I like that idea. Orion joining us on Facebook saying, my job is boring, uninteresting, repetitive. I don't get paid enough to stare at a screen all day anymore. Interesting. Michael says, low pay, not appreciated. But didn't all of these things that you're talking about exist before the pandemic, with the exception of what Sarah is saying, that certainly a hiring crisis is making it harder and making it so people have to do more? But we've seen that happen before, and you didn't rise to the level of two-thirds of Americans wanting to quit their jobs. So I hadn't thought about this at all until I read this article in Fortune, and I want to share with you their thought process because I think that it's a very interesting picture on just humanity in general. And So I'm excited to share it with you. Here it is. The real reason everyone is quitting their jobs right now. Now, they are calling it, listen to this, it has a name, the Great Resignation. It has taken many by surprise. Nearly two-thirds of U.S. workers, I'm not showing you the whole thing for a reason because I don't want to jump the gun. Nearly two-thirds of U.S. workers are looking for a new job. But according to some HR and management studies, we probably could have predicted this would happen. Over decades, researchers have revealed turnover patterns that can explain why many are quitting in droves right now. Employers looking to stop the exodus should pay attention. There you go. I'll let you see that much of it. Michael says, learn to live on less. Heather says, before the pandemic, people were still crying for a living wage, so I'm not sure they were satisfied 18 months ago. So satisfied is different than looking for another job. And here's what Fortune suggests, and this is according to several studies and researchers that they've spoken to. They suggest that each of us individually, that there are things that can cause us to reassess our lives and our daily activities. And for most of us, what commonly will do that is a crisis. So you're humming along and your job and your outlook is good. And then you have a loved one die of cancer, for example. And all of a sudden, you're suddenly confronted with the finality of life, the mortality that you exist under, the realization that if you keep doing what you're doing every day, that when you look back, you may have a lot of regret. Somebody going through a hurricane and having all of their possessions wiped out is one of these kind of life-changing reassessment moments. And maybe many of you have had one of these life-changing reassessment moments. If you have, I'd love to hear it and share it with everybody else. But it's that type of moment that suddenly makes you realize, you know, I'm not getting paid enough, and I don't know if I want to work the rest of my life in a miserable job and a miserable situation. So now with that perspective in mind, when I ask you what has happened in the last 18 months that has caused 2/3 of the American workforce to want to leave their jobs, well, what they're suggesting is that all of us have gone through a life-changing realization about life. And that typically this is something that affects a small portion of the population. So everybody is going to have their moment when this happens. But as a nation, and my bet is that if this same type of study was done in other countries, my bet is you would probably see the same thing, because the globe is going through a reassessment of their lives. And so I found this to be fascinating. They say research has shown that people tend to quit their jobs after experiencing a turnover shock. That's what they describe as a life event that precipitates self-reflection about one's job satisfaction. Shocks can be positive, like grad school acceptance or a new baby, or negative, like a divorce or a sick relative. Or they can be global catastrophes, like COVID-19, that upend every aspect of daily life. The universal nature of the pandemic, they say, is a major reason so many are quitting at once. Most people don't evaluate their job satisfaction every one of 365 days a year. This is Brooks Holtom, a professor of management and senior associate dean at Georgetown University. He says those shocks usually happen idiosyncratically for people, but with the pandemic, it's happened in mass. So here we have virtually the entire workforce reassessing their feelings about work. To what degree will they work? Historically, the availability of other jobs predicted how often people follow through. And right now, the U.S. has a record number of job openings. Between these, the widespread self-reflection and increased ability to work from anywhere, it's a perfect storm colluding against employers. You find that interesting? I find that very interesting because, again, and I'd love to know if you are, what did they call it? Are you in turnover shock? because you think about it, you know, one of the things that I do, one of the jobs that I've taken on is I've become, and I haven't shared this with you, but I'll share it with you now. I've become a tax expert for day traders. So I provide tax advice for people who are day trading. And I've spent a lot of time educating myself on this. I work with a company called Trader Tax Pros, and I give consultations all day long about taxes for specifically for day traders, because day trading taxes is very different than any other type of taxes. And if you're not careful, you can really get in a lot of trouble day trading without knowing about the tax ramifications. So because of that, I spend my days talking to people who started day trading during the pandemic. And there are millions of them, partly because they had time. But I think another reason is because they went through this turnover shock. And they're reassessing what they want to do with their lives. And trying to figure out, do I really want to spend 8 hours a day working for somebody else, doing this stuff all day long? And I think that, again, that it's something that the globe is going through. And I think it's going to redefine the workforce. And we've seen the pandemic redefine so many parts of businesses. Like, I know restaurant owners who aren't sure if they want to reopen their dining area because they've done so well with drive-through. And when you don't have to staff a front counter and you don't have to, you know, clean up a dining area, then why would you? Same with like DoorDash, I mean, and delivery of groceries and everything else. There have been so many shifts that we've seen, I know in my personal life and in the businesses that I see and work with, so many shifts. Like, you know, all these businesses, I remember before the pandemic, there was debate about work from home programs and can you get productivity out of your employees if they work from home? And so many employers said, no, we don't want to even try. And then all of a sudden it was forced upon them and they realized that it can work and work well. And it brings a quality of life to the people working at home because you don't have the commute on both ends. You can live virtually anywhere depending upon the job. So you can move somewhere where you're, where the cost of living is much lower. We're quickly entering a place, I mean, think about this, where it doesn't matter where you live. You can work anywhere. And I find myself in that situation right now because all the work that I do right now, I can do anywhere. And, you know, my other small business of hosting people's podcasts has resulted in me interviewing people in India and Canada and the UK and South America and Africa. And I'm sitting here in Lehi, Utah and just working from home and doing all these things. So I think that we've seen a huge shift in so many ways because of the pandemic. I'm curious how it's affected your life and your job, and have you experienced turnover shock? Fortune is suggesting that businesses are going to have to adjust. They are going to have to figure out now what attracts the post-pandemic employee. Because what attracted the pre-pandemic employee, that equation has changed completely. Now, how quickly will they figure it out? I don't know, because I don't know if we know. You know, I don't know if the employee really knows what they're looking for. I know millions of them are looking at day trading. And let me just caution you, if you're thinking about day trading, please don't just dive in. The cool thing about day trading is you can practice real world. You can set up a brokerage account and trade Monopoly money, and there's no expense to you. And so please, please do that, because I've talked to so many people who had a couple of good trades. They watched a YouTube video. They saw a couple of good, they made a couple of good trades and they're like, oh, I'm going all in. And they lost everything. So please don't. If you are in turnover shock and you're thinking about day trading, call me before you. I'll help you out. Let's see. Orion says, hang on, let me. Oh, things are slow tonight. My system is being taxed here. Okay, Heather says, oh, we already read that one, Heather. Sorry. Orion says we're going to be in a bad position as an economy if nobody is inclined to work. It's apparent in the service sector right now as service pretty much sucks everywhere you go. Yeah. Look, something's got to give, right? I mean, the good news is most of these two-thirds that I'm telling you about, they are employed right now. They're just looking for other work. The question I have for you, and this was actually Chris Larson asked me this. You know, he joins us on the podcast. I don't know if you're out there tonight, Chris, or not. He's been under the weather. But he asked, how are we going to – there's 10 million jobs open right now, but we don't have 10 million people to fill those jobs. So what are we going to do? Is it robots? And he suggested, and I thought this was a really interesting thought, he suggested that perhaps people are, that there's a consequence for paying more, because we've seen a lot of companies, even without the living wage being put in place, step up and start paying more. That perhaps that made it so people who had two jobs now could just work one. And so it's interesting, you know, we always talk about unintended consequences on this program. What if you did suddenly have a living wage, which we've talked about living wage, and you can go back and watch other podcasts where I break it down for you 100%. It is not what it's all cracked up to be. But if suddenly everybody only had to have one job, you think, great, everybody has one job, but suddenly we have millions of job openings. And so then your employer is going to be like, hey, we need you to do the job of the guy next to you. So you may have one job, but in that one job, you're doing the work of two or three people. And then you're not going to be happy with your job. And it just keeps on rolling. So I just wanted to share that with you. I found that to be fascinating. Turnover shock. Are you experiencing turnover shock? And are you looking for work? Because, you know, maybe before you weren't satisfied with your job, but it wasn't enough to make you look. And now post-pandemic, are you looking? So that was very interesting to me. One other thing. Well, I've got a couple things on my list tonight. I'll share this with you. Texas at it again. I shared with you the comments of Greg Abbott, Republican governor of Texas, when asked about the abortion law, if it allows for those who have been raped or victims of incest to get an abortion. And his answer was, well, we're just going to stop all rape. And so you don't have to worry about it. We'll stop all rapists. And so we dealt with that the other night. But now Texas has passed a law. Here we go. Here's my conservative people. Pretty soon you're not going to hear me say that anymore because I'm getting pushed to the edge. Taking away business rights. Big fans of business rights until it affects them. And this is one of the things that I keep saying that we see this all the time now. People love the Constitution. They're all for the Constitution. But when it comes to something that affects them, suddenly it's okay. So here we go. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, I don't know what that, okay, has signed a bill regulating how social media companies moderate content. The new law passed as HB 20 in early September prohibits banning or demonetizing or otherwise restricting content based on the viewpoint of the user or another person, whether or not that viewpoint is expressed on the social media platform itself. It requires all social media services to disclose how they promote and moderate content and mandates transparency reports similar to those produced by Facebook, Google, and other major web companies. David says, how the heck do you enforce that in states? Well, you know, businesses have had to deal with different state legislation for a long time. Like, you know, sell a car in California and the regulations are very different than selling a car in Utah. You know, that's why you don't want a California smog set up on your car. So businesses have to deal with this kind of stuff. Now, those people who pass this are celebrating thinking that they are fighting for free speech. That's not what this is. They're fighting for you to have mandated speech within somebody else's business. And it's not right. It's not right. A similar law has a judge shot it down recently. My expectation is this will be shut down. And if it goes to the Supreme Court, my hope is that it will be shut down. Because this is the equivalent of telling a grocery store that you can't take somebody's product off your shelves. For whatever reason, you have to put their product on the shelf. They are treating social media as a journalistic institution, and they are not. And if I want to start a social media platform that only promotes conservatism and bans all other thought besides conservatism, then the good old American way should allow me to do that. And if I want to say I do not want lies about COVID, statements that are unbacked by science or research, because we think that ruins people's lives and causes death, then as a business, I ought to have a right to do that. And if I want to say that I'm not going to allow election fraud lies to be perpetuated unless there's a shred of stinking evidence, then I ought to be able to do this. And the other thing that I will remind you about is that they're playing the victim here, and they are not a victim. Conservatism is not being censored, banned, or even flagged. It is not. Studies bear that out. And you may say, oh, they're biased. No, it's show me your favorite conservative pundit. And go to their Twitter account and go to their Facebook account. And I promise you, they are not blocked, censored, or flagged. This is a problem that does not exist. This is, it's victimhood at its finest. And it's pathetic. The only things that are being flagged and banned are election lies and COVID lies. And for conservatives, think about this. They're saying, oh, we're being blocked. It's like you're admitting that you're the one spreading the COVID lies and the election lies. Well, because that's what's happening. You are the ones who are spreading it. This is not about conservatism. And if it is about conservatism, then I'm done with it. I'm out. If conservatism is about making social media companies have to present lies that destroy people's faith in the electoral process and lies that cost people's lives, then I'm done. I'm done. To act like this is about conservatism is just gross. And then to take away business rights, that is not American. That is not constitutional. You have never had a right to free speech in anybody's business or on anybody else's platform. That is a perversion. And they feel good about this. And you know, think about what's going to happen now. Well, first of all, here's what I think should happen. I think Facebook, Twitter, all those guys should immediately ban their service in Texas. Cut them off. You say, fine. We're not going to send our signal to a single IP address in Texas. Congratulations. That's what I think they should do. Because otherwise, now the extremes will have free reign. And lies that cost lives and that promote and incite violence in our country will be unrestricted on people's business platforms. Again, you want to go in the streets and promote that stuff. You want to create your own website. You want to create your own social media. Then the Constitution gives you every right and authority to do that. And you are protected. And I will fight for your right to do that. As long as you're not directly inciting violence. But free speech has never meant you have a right to put your product on the shelves of another business. Never. This from the same group of people who believe that you ought to be able to turn down a wedding cake for a gay marriage. My friends, what the hell is going on? Help me. This is so backwards. It is so backwards. How did we ever lose our way? And I honestly, I got to stop saying we, because first I'm grouping you into that, and I know you're not involved in this, and I'm grouping me into it, and you know I'm not involved in it, but I'm clinging at the last straws here. I really am. And it hurts. It's like this emotional conflict that I'm having here. Yeah, any other comments on that? Please tell me I don't have to worry and that I'm wrong. I would love, honestly, I would love for somebody to set me straight on this. I would love it. Because you know what? It's not just Texas. If you're like, oh, it's just that crazy Texas, you know. No, they're trying to do this in every Republican-run state. They're proud of this stuff. And they actually think they're fighting for free speech. Yeah. Whew, okay, take a breath. I got my swig here tonight. By the way, have you noticed that the lines at all of the soda stores are down? Have you noticed this? Used to be you could not get in a swig line here in Lehigh without the line going around the corner. And I had some friends who told me, we should go and we should open a soda place. And I got this one right. I told him you're crazy. Because they have no protectable proprietary product. They have nothing that distinguishes them. I realize we just went from free speech into soda, but you know how I am. When I don't have a clock on the radio and a program director hounding over me, I can get sidetracked pretty quickly. But I told them, I said, it's going to be a few years and this craze is going to be over because every single establishment can duplicate what they're doing, and they don't even have to build to do it. Every convenience store started adding flavors. I mean, so I think saturation point is beyond. And so my recommendation tonight, you've got two recommendations. If you're getting into day trading, call me first so I can help you with the taxes. Second, don't get into the soda business. Don't do it. There's nothing protectable about that. Orion says, don't worry. It's just a matter of time before the Union Army has to burn down the Texas Triangle to make a point. Heather says, it's the end of the world as we know it. No, you know what? It's not the end of the world, Heather. It is possibly the end of conservatism. It is possibly It could, if we continue down this path, it could be the end of representation, which would be the end of the world. But representation only works when you accept the fact that the other side has a right to their voice and they have a right to their representation. And their representation should be respected. And the minute that we stop believing that, it's one of those things. The Constitution is amazing until you don't get your way. And now we need to rise up. And every time I hear somebody say this, I say, okay, let's say you have your little civil war and somehow you manage to win. I ask him, what kind of government you're going to put in place? We're going to restore the Constitution. You mean the document that has obviously failed so much that you need to have a civil war? So the problem that they have with the Constitution is that it allows the other side to have a voice and a say. They only like the Constitution when they're winning. Let's see. Here's Todd on Facebook. He says, I spent 15 years in district management position in the service industry. I can assure you that American customers are more entitled and cruel than ever. Why should people be subjected to disrespect and bullying for $10 an hour or even $15? I totally agree with you. If you watch my TikTok, or I've got a JMAC Snacks coming out tomorrow, there's a woman, I think in Louisiana, who was purposely coughing on people because they were wearing a mask. She got fired by her employer, by the way, when they saw the video that went viral. My son works in a pizza place. He's in management. And some guy last night didn't like the response of one of the employees. 16-year-old kid at his first job. And this 50 or 60-year-old man started calling him a little S-word and entitled and started foul-filthing him as loud as he could in the restaurant. And I'm just like, what kind of, you know, that the adults are becoming children and we're like excited about it or something. I don't know. So I agree with you, you know, but I can also share with, I agree that it's worse, but like you, Todd, I spent a long time in the restaurant industry. I was also a regional manager and I have stories, and I'm sure you do, of incredibly outrageous behavior. I know it's worse. I know it is, for sure. Let's see, Orion. So what's going to happen on the next election cycle when Republican legislatures decide to nullify the popular vote in their state and put their guy of choice? Blue states are going to revolt. Well, I don't think that that's going to happen. I hope it's not going to happen. I don't think it goes that far. I think... Here's my quiet little hope, and let's say it's quiet. It's not quiet, but day after day is going by without any election fraud evidence. Day after day is going by with the pandemic getting worse and people dying, and more unvaxxed are dying, and more mouthpieces are dying who were saying, don't get vaxxed. And you will see nationally, and I haven't seen any international polling, but I'm sure it's the same, that people are starting to come around. And the reason for that is because eventually reality sets in. I mean, you remember Ted Cruz saying that COVID would disappear the day Joe Biden gets elected? I mean, what a load of crap, right? But people keep thinking it's going to disappear. There was a guy, I don't know if you saw this, it was on TikTok. There was a guy who put out a Facebook post saying, here's my deal with you. You inject me with COVID. I will take the hit. You inject me with COVID. And if I die, then you can all know and agree that COVID is real. But if I survive, you will have to admit it's a complete hoax. Now, the whole premise of that is ridiculous because there's nothing that says everybody who gets COVID dies. In fact, we know the percentage is low. It's higher than anything else going around out there. But it's still, you know, it's still low. It's like, what, 1.8%? I haven't looked at the numbers recently. But so to act like the statement itself is ridiculous. But guess what? He got COVID. And guess what? He died. And in his last post, he wasn't doing a mea culpa, and forgive me, he was raging for Trump to restore this country to greatness. So not everybody catches it even on, you know, catches or turns around on their deathbed. But I really believe, this is in my heart of hearts, I really believe, Orion, that as time goes on, as you see the election audit in Arizona finally finish up, as you see all of these other things happen, as you see the MyPillow guy continue to not be able to present any evidence but selling more pillows, as you see the lawsuit from Dominion go forward, as you see judges censuring people like the Kraken, Sidney Powell, because she presented falsehoods in a court of law, as you see those things go on, my hope is that it fades. I don't think Republicans want it to fade because they're using it to leverage this legislation that they're passing in states to try and quell the vote. But it's fading, and you're seeing the anti-COVID stuff fade. And I get, David says, I hope it will. Todd says you'd be shocked at how upset people could get over a $5 pizza. David, I spent more time in the food business than I spent in talk radio. So I know exactly how, but I'm sure you're sharing with everybody else. If you look at, like, I have Google Alerts set up just for COVID, just the word COVID, and every city in the nation is dealing with this. In Utah, we're back up to 2,000 cases a week, where we were 400. It's just becoming undeniable. You just can't, you know, people will start to believe their eyes and what they're seeing. Because every claim that's been made about it, it's all past. Just like every claim that's been made about election fraud, it's all past. Donald Trump, breaking news, was not restored to the White House in August. Breaking news, he is not flying around on Air Force One. He is not the president of the United States. Sometime even the most deceived will have a point when they're like, okay, nothing has happened. No predictions by QAnon. Nothing has happened. And everything they said about COVID going away was wrong. And now the people who are dying are the unvaxxed. And who are the unvaxxed? Yeah, you can do the dot, dot, dot there. Let's do this, though. You know, I continue to rail against my conservative counterparts here. But I did want to share this with you because I think that this is an overreach from the other side. This is from ABC News, and I'm sure you saw this on all the networks. New federal rule to require businesses with 100 plus employees to mandate vaccinations. What do you think about this? I have no problem when the federal government wants to mandate it for federal employees or for the military. That's in their purview. That's in their power. The question is it in their purview and their power to force businesses to do so? What do you think? This says President Joe Biden announced on Thursday that the federal government employees and contractors will now be required to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19, and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, otherwise known as OSHA, will create a rule for private businesses with 100 or more employees to require their employees to be vaccinated or undergo weekly testing. A senior administration official estimated that this new OSHA requirement will cover about 80 million workers and businesses that do not comply with the agency's rule. Workers and businesses that do not comply with the agency's rule can face substantial fees up to $14,000. OSHA will require these employers to offer paid time off for vaccinations. President Biden says, my job as president is to protect all Americans. What do you think? Let's see. Todd says, to me, it feels un-American to force businesses to do that. I don't like to operate, Todd, and I agree with you, but I don't like to operate in the, is it American or un-American? Although I think I probably said that back talking about what Texas did. So maybe I do like to operate in it. I guess what I'm trying to say is, I'm catching myself here. What I'm trying to say is, my question is, not is it un-American, because a Democrat has a different opinion of what America is. So my question is it proper use and legal use for the federal government? Remember, one of the things we talk about here on this program is, just because it's a good program or it would have an impact doesn't mean the federal government should do it. And doesn't mean they have the legal authority to do that. And we look past that all the time. Todd says, it's a gut check thing for me. Would the founding fathers want it? Sarah says, no. The libertarian in me says, no, the businesses can make their own voice. Couple of things here that I really hate. Unfunded mandates. The Democrats love to force things to happen and make businesses pay for it. That's what the Affordable Care Act was about. And I've always said, if you want to provide, if you want a service to be provided to all Americans, then you better pay for it. Don't put unfunded mandates on employers. Employers already have to pay too much per employee, and it makes employees harder to employ because of all the labor burdens that are stacked on top. So don't sit there and tell me you're going to help employees by putting more financial mandates on employers. If you want paid time off for people to get a vaccination, then you pay for it and charge the taxpayers. And if you want employers to do weekly testing, you pay for it. And I think they do pay for that. So that's my first thing, is I cannot stand the federal government putting more mandates on the employee. And the employee is always like, this is great because I'll get this or get that, not understanding that you already cost your employer so much. It's just going to be one more thing. Just one more thing. Heather brought up a point that I was going to make. Todd, George Washington actually made his army get inoculated against smallpox. I believe that is true as well. But again, army versus citizens versus businesses. What's the line there? What's the line? I believe that this authority is and should be reserved to the states. I do not believe in much of what OSHA itself stands for. I don't believe the only place that Congress has any authority here, in my opinion, is to regulate interstate commerce. And when you look at OSHA and so many of the things that they require, they have nothing to do with interstate commerce. And that's really where Congress gets its authority, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Interstate commerce. And that's where most legislation is justified, under interstate commerce. People think it's for the general welfare because it says for the general welfare. The general welfare is never used in court cases to justify laws. What's used in court cases is interstate commerce. Because ideally, in a perfect world, every time Congress passes something, they should be able to go to Article 1 and say, here's where we get the authority to do that. And if they can't go there to get that authority to do that, then you have to go to the 10th Amendment, which says anything not mentioned in the Constitution is reserved for the states. Boom, comes back to Utah, where it belongs. And what do I keep telling you about why it belongs in Utah? It belongs in Utah because that's where you can have a say. The minute it becomes federalized, you lose all say, especially in the state of Utah. You lose all say. So I don't care how good the program is. I don't care how good of an idea it is. Unless you can prove to me that the federal government has the authority and that they're the only ones that can do it, then that better come back to the states. So no, I don't agree with this. I think it is an overreach. Again, you want to do it for federal employees? Fine. You want to do it for military? Fine. But let Utah take care of Utah. And butt out. Now, if you want to send money to help pay for these tests and things like that, I would much prefer some type of incentive. You know, I would love for them to say, for every vaccinated employee, you get a tax credit or something like that. I would love to see something like that because that puts no burden on the employer. It puts no burden handed down from the employer to the employee. So I'm a big fan of that kind of program. Hey, if you can get 90% vaccination rate at your business, we're going to give you a tax credit. So then the business comes around and says, hey, guys, if we can get this tax credit, we're going to have a party. Or, you know, depending on how much it is, you're going to get a raise or you're going to get an end of the year bonus. Now, we know that that doesn't always happen that way. Businesses would feel entitled to keep the money. Some would pass it on. That's why people say trickle down doesn't work. The reason is because there's no built-in incentive for the trickle down to keep trickling. But if you pass the legislation correctly through incentivization instead of penalty, then the benefit only occurs when trickle down occurs. You see what I'm saying? Does that make any sense? I hope it does. So that's my take. Let's see more of your comments. Heather, that's more comparable to government employees being required to get it, not private sector. So that's a response to George Washington. Heather also says, I found it interesting in Biden's speech that he kept emphasizing he has the power to do these things. He said it several times, knowing most people wouldn't know any better. I was getting hot in here. I just realized the ceiling fan is off. I'm like, what's going on? Let's see. Michael says, oh, let Texas take care of Texas, Florida, etc. They are nuts. Look, they are nuts, but that's the whole point. The people of Texas have the ability to overturn their governments. Or they get what they get. I mean, that's the whole point of representation, right? And you can't say, oh, we're not going to have representation because we don't like the way these states are acting. We have to always remind ourselves that in this great experiment of ours, there is not just a federal government. There is the federal government, and then there are 50 sovereign state governments. And the Constitution says, if it's not mentioned in the Constitution, you can't touch it. It's the states who get it. And it doesn't say, unless they're whack jobs, you know, the Constitution doesn't say, unless they're crazy. It doesn't say that. This is Sarah. She says, I had to go full time after Obamacare because the insurance that I was able to get as part-time worker no longer could be provided for me. This was especially hard for me because I was at the time taking care of 3 disabled adults. So no, Obamacare did not help me at all. It only reduced what my employer could offer, resulting in me having to go full time. It's a perfect example. And I said when it was happening, I was on the air in Texas screaming as loud as I could that this is not going to insure more people, the mandate. What it's going to do is it's going to chase people out of full-time employment. Because I had seen the very same thing happen in Hawaii. And here's the crazy thing. We all knew that what Obama really wanted and what the Democrats really wanted was single-payer health care. Now, I will tell you, if my only two choices are a health care where the burden is put on the employer or single-payer, I'm going to choose single-payer. What is single payer? It's like Social Security. We all pay in and we all get the same coverage. That's what Obama really wanted, but they didn't feel like they could get it through. So they gave us this hybrid that's part government, part business. And like Sarah's pointing out, the burden often passed on to the employee, and it didn't help. There are parts of the Affordable Care Act that have helped, but we haven't seen inflation in healthcare disappear. It's continued to be out of control. So I'm not against the single payer argument. I don't think it's the best way to go. I think it's better than this. Just me. Michael says it bleeds all over us. These other states, yeah. It does, but that's still the way the Constitution was built, and it's the way I would like it to stay. Because otherwise, to me, the alternative is the federal government has all the power. We have none, so you might as well not even give us this fake vote. And then we just take what we get. And we do that out of fear of what the other states might do. I think that that's a recipe for the end of representation and the end of everything that is good and great about our government. What will happen in Texas and other places is there is an ebb and flow. And the pendulum will bounce back. And I think the pendulum against this brand of conservatism is going to swing back. And Biden was the first part of that swing. So aggressively that no matter what the Republicans do, they will lose power across the board. It's just me. I think that pendulum is starting to swing back. Sarah says, just saying in that trying to help, they hurt me and my family. I know. I had in my family, when the Affordable Care Act was put in place, I had 3 employees in my family who were employed, who were full-time employees. The minute the Affordable Care Act went into place, they all were reduced down to part-time employees. They still didn't get insurance, and now their hours were cut. Now, that should have been the most obvious result that you could ever imagine. So, unintended consequences. Todd says, I hope the irony of Utah calling another state crazy isn't lost on anyone. We are no Texas and we are no Florida. I feel like when you put us in the light against them, we're pretty calm and measured right now. Let's see. Michael says, didn't we just get done talking about employers can't hire? Now they want you to work overtime. So what is it? Well, they want you to work overtime because they can't hire. If they could hire enough, they wouldn't want you to work overtime. Is that your point? I'm not sure if that's your point. What else you got tonight? I had one other story. This was just strange to me. It's the answer to the question that no one ever asked, at least I thought, I can't believe this is a question, but it is. Did you know that there are those who believe that AI, artificial intelligence computers, should be able to patent their own inventions? And did you know that there are some countries that actually allow this to happen? That if a computer comes up with a patent, somehow the computer owns that patent. I don't even understand it. I can't even process this in my mind. Here's the story. This is from, let's give them credit. This is The Verge. Should an artificially intelligent machine be able to patent its own inventions? For a U.S. federal judge, the larger implications of that question were irrelevant. In April 2020, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office ruled that only natural persons could be credited as the inventor of a patent. And a U.S. court decided Thursday that, yes, that's what the law technically says. Not every country agrees with that direction. South Africa and Australia decided to go the other direction, granting one patent and reinstating a second patent application filed by AR researcher Stephen Thaler, whose AI system reportedly came up with a flashing light and a new type of food container. Thaler is the one who sued the U.S. in this case as well. He's part of a group called the Artificial Inventor Project that's lobbying for AI recognition around the globe. First of all, help me out here. I'd love to get him on the phone. Maybe I can. Maybe we can interview him. You never know. What would motivate you to want the AI to have the patent instead of you? I don't understand that. If you create an AI and that AI is creating patentable ideas, that's a gold mine. Why would you want the AI to have the patent? This is one of the most... I thought I was being pranked. I thought this was an Onion article. I'm confused. Hang on, I have to cough here. Do you see that I have an actual mute button now? Yeah, it's pretty cool. That's because of your support. I have a mute button. I don't get it. I don't understand. Todd says, I feel like it would be bragging rights. Like, look how sophisticated our AI is. The whole point of a patent, correct me if I'm wrong, but the whole point of a patent is to be able to reap the financial benefits that come from that patent. And letting the AI have it, well, the AI, I hope, doesn't have a financial interest. Maybe it does. I've thought of a whole different movie here. You know, the movie Terminator, where the machines take over, they become self-aware, but they take over by force. Well, what about this one? AIs, they don't take over by force. They take over using the legal system. They take us all to court. They litigate us out of existence. There's a movie for you. David says it already exists in a lot of fields. Todd says it's insane, that's for sure. Orion says the last thing we need is AI with the ability to make better versions of itself. That's a recipe for extinction. And then he says, at approximately 0730 hours, Skynet became self-aware and they filed a lawsuit. Yeah, I love it, Todd. I love you guys. Terminator 4, judgment for the plaintiff. Oh, that's so good. We need to make this movie. And our only defense will be Perry Mason in a wheelchair. That is so good. I'm crying a little bit here. Oh, judgment for the plaintiff. You guys are awesome. All right, my friends, that's all I had for you tonight. Thank you for joining me. See, when I cry a little bit and I've got these lights on me, now my eyes start to itch. I think that's it. Let's see, how long have we been going? Did we reach our hour? Oh, hour and 8 minutes. We've been going strong here. Todd says, thanks. Thank you, everybody, for being with me tonight. I love our conversations. I think if anything, it helps me just get some of these things off my chest. I will tell you, I'm still formulating what to do about it. You know that I've been working on a political pact designed to lift politics, and we're still working on that. But I'm thinking about other things and other alternatives. So stay tuned. I guess that's all I can say right now. And in the meantime, become a patron. Go to jmcfarland.com. If you're still on Podbean and Patreon, come on over. Come on over to jmcfarland.com and get all the benefits and rewards that I'm offering. Other than that, thank you so much. Have a wonderful night. Keep watching. If you're a member on jmcfarland.com, you should see a new JMAC Snacks tomorrow. All the cool videos that I see on the internet. You can also see those. I'm starting to put those on TikTok now. See, I'm just crying. You guys got to me. All right, I feel better. Oh, and I got to go finish. No spoilers. I got to go finish Dallas, Tampa Bay. NFL started tonight. I don't know why it makes me so happy. Why does it fill my heart with joy? And we all need a little joy. Everybody have a wonderful night. I'll catch you next Tuesday. Oh, next Tuesday. I'm going to be out of town, I think, on Tuesday. I'm going down to a conference in Vegas, which I'm a little worried about. Be wearing a mask. So I'm not sure if I'll be back in time to do a Tuesday show. If not, maybe we'll do a special Wednesday broadcast. But thank you, everybody. Sarah says good night. Todd says thanks, Jay. Everybody, thank you for your comments. I'm so glad I started this. I started the conversation kind of fired up, and we get to end with a good laugh. So good is still there in the world, right? Everybody, thank you. Have a great night.